Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of All My Issues. In this episode, episode 58, we are talking about some of our favorite horror films or horror things, I guess. There are some comic books mixed in there as well. We try to throw in different types of media from time to time because this is All of My Issues, right? So we try to include those. So without further ado, let's get started. Oh, and happy Halloween, everyone.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right. Today, we have a special Halloween episode. Ooh. Extra spooky. Extra spooky. We're going to talk about some of our favorite horror things, comics, movies, all that stuff, right?
That's correct.
I guess as tradition.
Tradition holds.
And there you go. Tradition holds. And what is tradition? Sam goes first.
I go first.
Okay. What do we have? Not tradition.
That's right.
All right.
Squeaky chairs.
And squeaky chairs, yes.
Ooh, extra spooky chair. We should preface that we did a horror movie one, like, a while ago, if they want to look back up a top five list of old horror movies, but we decided to revisit it with some new choices as well.
Exactly. Indeed.
Both in movies, television, and comics. So, starting off with number three on my list is the 2017 movie, The Cult of Chucky. And that is in the whole Chucky Child's Play series. That is number six in the series.
Number six.
The previous installment was The Curse of Chucky. And so now we are at The Cult of Chucky. Child's Play. Yeah, that's number six.
Number six.
All right. So Cult of Chucky takes place a year after The Curse of Chucky. And our main character, Nika, she is now, after the events of Curse of Chucky, she's now in a mental institution. And if you remember, you also got to see little Andy grown up as a man now at the end of Curse of Chucky. And he makes a cameo in Curse of Chucky, and he also returns in The Cult of Chucky. So our main character, Nika, is stuck in a mental institution after the events, and the psychologist is trying to get past her fear of the fact that he doesn't believe that the murderous doll, good guy doll, Chucky, ever existed, and wants Nika to confess that she is the one who did all the murders. Now, mind you, Nika is in a wheelchair, and at this point in time, it was so traumatic, Nika doesn't even realize whether or not what she saw was Chucky is real anymore. So then a lot of things start happening around, people start dying, and all of a sudden you're seeing more Chucky dolls than there should be when there was originally just one. I come to find out that our young hero Andy also realized that Chucky's back and goes to the mental institution to try to save Nika from Chucky's wrath. A little quick spoiler alert if you haven't seen it yet. So if you haven't seen it yet, fast forward so you don't get it ruined. You were just warned. Chucky somehow found a spell that can transfer his soul into multiple people and items.
Oh, so
that's why there are more than one Chucky doll.
Uh-huh.
And or people. So it is the battle of wits and the battle as two old rivals race against time to save a girl. So I thought this was pretty well done. I thought the idea was pretty cool. The fact that it went from, you know, we had the kid of Chucky, the child of Chucky, and then when Curse of Chucky and Cult of Chucky came out, it got back to what Child's Play 1 and 2 was. So,
oh, so this is more like kind of like a revisiting kind of the first Child's Play kind of.
This is more of, instead of like the slapstick silliness death, this is more serious.
Gotcha.
So I recommend Cult of Chucky, also Curse of Chucky. See that first and then see Cult of Chucky if you are a fan of Child's Play and Child's Play 2. So not so much Child's Play 3 or The Seed of Chucky, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, there was one Bride of Chucky.
Oh, so that might be 7 then, yeah. So we got Child's Play, Child's Play 2, Child's Play 3, Bride of Chucky, Seed of Chucky, Curse of Chucky, and the Call of Chucky. That's number 7. So yeah, that's so seven.
Seven
man, in the series. He's catching up to Elm Street and
it's
13. 6 movies I haven't seen.
Yeah,
you've seen the first one, though, right? Yeah. I like the first one quite a bit. The my brother took me to go see that in the theater. And I remember kind of like being
it was, you know what,
because like comes to life
that kind of like hurt the My Buddy doll, but like, you know, the My Buddies didn't really talk, so
true.
Now Teddy Ruxpin,
that dude
was creepy. I'm sorry,
probably,
Teddy Ruxpin is creepy.
You know, the sales of those things probably went down.
Have you ever seen the very fact that we're just having this conversation confirms my simulation argument, but because literally it was yesterday I saw where they have video of this like old dilapidated Teddy Ruxpin talking, and it's the creepiest thing I've ever seen.
It doesn't have the fur on it or something like
that?
Yeah,
it has the fur on it, but the eyes are on the... I'll show you. It's weird after this, but yeah, but seriously, just yesterday, I think it was at most 2 days ago.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
It's a weird, creepy animatronics. Yeah, that's...
Don't even get me started with, you know, Chuck E. Cheese old animatronics.
Man. I mean, you know, Five Nights at Freddy has made a whole franchise of games just based on that. So, yeah. I always thought the effects for Child's Play were pretty good, too. And even today, like, if you go back and watch it, because I don't know when was the most recent time that I saw the first one, but... I thought the effects were pretty good.
I never had a problem with the effects.
Yeah.
I just never been scared of dolls.
No.
So it's just the same way, like, some people couldn't watch Arachnophobia or whatever, but I don't hate spiders. So that became like, then it just became a non-funny comedy.
Oh, yeah. I liked arachnophobia too.
It was okay, but when you have absolutely no fear of spiders,
right?
I can kind of see that, I guess. But
literally, one time I felt something crawling my arm. I look over and it's a spider, and I don't jump at spiders because they don't. I've never been bitten by a spider. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't also live in Australia, or else I'd probably be scared of spiders. But.
That's true. Here we have less, you know, less to worry about as far as eight-legged bugs go.
Yeah.
I guess so. Yeah. All right. So, Cult of Chucky. So the cult comes in because there's multiple Chuckies.
That's correct.
See, I was wondering. I was thinking there might have been like a subplot where there were a bunch of people that were worshiping Chucky.
No.
And so, no. Okay.
I thought perhaps he joined the band Living Color.
Oh, that could also be true. It's a lot of personality in that doll.
Personality. If they look into my eyes, what do you see?
All right,
my you will find. Well, we're doing three, right?
Yep,
we are on three.
My number three is it.
It.
The 2017 version.
Is it? What is it? Sorry.
But, you know. Yes.
Faith
yes.
No More.
Faith No More. Faith we're going to tie all these back to the 80s. Song.
That's right.
Late 80s. Rock songs of some sort. I'm going to do a combination 2017 film, also the book. I'm going to skip the miniseries because I did not find it as scary as that. So the story of some children living in Derry, Maine, in the movie, it's taking place in 1989, which is 3 years after the release of the book actually took place. But anyway, basically the kids just every 17 years, there's a 27, every so many years, a ancient, almost Lovecraftian creature rises and feeds on the terror of the children of the town, and even sometimes the adults, because there has been other incidents at sawmills or things in the past, and these kids get wound up and have to go try to fight the creature that lives in the sewers that takes various shapes, the most scary or at least the most prominent of which is Pennywise the clown. Originally played by Tim Curry, wonderfully. That's the best part of that original movie. But now played by one of the, I think, Bill Skarsgård. One of the Skarsgård kids.
I think it's Bill, right?
And to great effect, I thought the cinematography was great. The story, it didn't take any liberties really with the story, I didn't think. It stayed pretty true. If I have one complaint about the movie is that there's just not a lot new there, but at the same time, with what they had, I thought they did a really good job. And the things they did change, I liked with the thing that flips through the pictures, like vacation pictures, that suddenly just starts
going through.
And you've got the clown coming at you. Even the familiar things like Georgie and the sailboat at the beginning was a lot more brutal.
I was surprised at how brutal that was in the movie.
Actually, made for $35 million, it grossed over $700 million worldwide. It's the most profitable horror movie of all time.
Whoa! I did not know that.
It is the fourth highest grossing R-rated movie behind the Deadpool movies and The Matrix Reloaded.
Wow! I'm more surprised that Matrix Reloaded was rated R.
Yeah, it had an orgy scene in it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess that kind of. Yeah.
The original Matrix in language. The original Matrix was R in violence.
Was it?
Yeah.
It's a light R. I mean, it's
Was that really an orgy? I just thought
it was a bunch of weird. It was like a weird rave, crap. I thought. Yeah. I mean,
there was sex.
Was there sex?
There had to have been sex.
Or maybe.
I can't remember.
I don't remember seeing any parts.
Yeah.
No. It wasn't like, it wasn't.
Hinted at.
No, yeah,
intimacy.
One ever watches that movie on Pornhub or something.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, doing searches for. Somebody is. somebody's searching for.
Got my glow sticks.
Let's bust out the Matrix Reloaded scene.
Well, realistically, when you're going to follow up one of the coolest sci-fi movies of all time, that really, how do you follow that up without an orgy? I mean,
that's true. That's
one of my favorite parts about Empire Strikes Back is the Hoth orgy at the beginning.
A little bit more clothing, but it's understandable in Hoth.
Yeah. Terminator 2, Rise of the Orgies. I'm sorry, no, that was Orgy Day. Sorry.
Orgy Day.
Was Rise of the Orgies.
Wow. Oh, man. Such high hopes for that movie when it was coming out.
Yeah.
Just didn't live up to it.
I just actually read an article within the last week, it might have been a video. No, it was a video on YouTube within the last week about that they revisited the Matrix sequels after hating them. and actually thought that they weren't as bad as they originally thought.
Really?
Because I have not watched them in years.
Like, I haven't either.
I haven't seen, I don't think, either. I own them, technically.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've seen them since I saw them in the theater.
Yeah, same here. I think I've...
The level of disappointment was so much.
Yeah, yeah, that I'm like, I don't need to see this again.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need to watch Disappointment Reloaded.
Yeah. I'm trying, because I think I hated the third one the most, I think. As I, at least my recollection is this.
I think I hated the second one.
I was really disappointed in the second one. It didn't help that there was a power outage in the movie theater.
Oh,
when I watched the second one.
Yeah, I can see how that could impact your.
And then they had to like restart a little bit, and they whatever it kind of takes you out of the viewing experience. But
yeah, I was more bothered by the whole Neo getting blinded, and then it's just weird.
They did a lot of weird things. Well, you know, the first one followed the hero, you know, hero archetype. Story so much
it's yeah, like
interchangeable
yeah.
with you know Star with Wars it, yeah. and Harry Potter, which you wouldn't know. And
that's true. So there's a hero arc in Harry Potter.
Oh yeah, completely.
Okay. All right.
But you know, it the second one just it became philosophical, and everybody explained everything so much.
Yeah,
and the third one it did too, but they went in such weird places with it that. I don't know. I don't know how you can take something that's this, like the first Matrix was like magic in a bottle. Like,
right. Yeah.
And it was their mystery. What is the Matrix? You know, how it was marketed at the early ages of the internet in terms of marketing. Yeah.
I remember watching it in the movie theater and thinking, oh my God, my mind was like blown. The red pill, blue pill thing. That was, you know, but
yeah,
it just seemed like they, I don't know.
And somehow society has now taken red pill and turned it into something terrible.
Oh, that's, man. Yeah.
Speaking of that, I seen a sign that said...
That sign?
I seen a sign that
did said... Did it open up your eyes? Are you happy now?
Man.
Yeah, 80s rock.
There you go.
It was like, ride the red wave. And I was like, that is a terrible slogan to have.
What is that a slogan for?
Yeah. It's like, ride the red wave, vote Republican. And it's like,
oh man,
really? Yeah. And you're like, really? And it has a literal wave. And I'm like, that's a terrible. Wow. Why would you want to ride the red wave? Yeah, right?
Yeah, all politics aside, it just sounds like a fetish.
Right. Thank you. That's what I was like. I was like, yo, I'm not the most deviant person, but I don't think that's right.
When I think of Red Wave, I'm thinking that scene in The Shining.
Right,
I'm thinking maybe the beginning of the movie
right,
Blade.
It's like,
you know, Red Waves.
Right, yeah, that's
blood.
Not.
I mean,
that's why Alabama calls himself the Crimson Tide.
When I hear Ride the Red Wave, I just assume that's, you know, having sex with someone on their period.
Right.
I mean, that's where I first started. Yeah. I think that's where Sam went as well.
Oh, okay.
We just found the innocent one.
Yes. Right. I was thinking more literal red wave. not so much. Although now that you explain it to me, yes.
Yes. Right. It's kind of like, yo.
Yeah.
That's a terrible slogan. Why would you do that?
Yeah,
that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vote Democrat. Eat the blue waffle.
Right. Yeah. Like, what?
Do not Google blue waffle.
Do not Google
whatever you do.
No.
Do you not know that?
I don't know that.
I don't know.
Do not.
All right.
There are things that you want to Google when you hear the phrases that you want to hear.
Yeah.
And maybe later on tonight you'll be sitting there thinking to yourself, I wonder what he means by that.
Yeah, I need to find out and then I
don't do it.
Never be able to unsee.
It is not something that should be seen with human eyes.
Wow.
So,
in fact,
as an advisory to everyone listening,
in fact, if you have non-human eyes, you still shouldn't see it.
Wow. How we fall deep into the Matrix with this.
I know,
one.
Right?
Man. And by the way,
It. Is it? What is it? All right. Okay.
All right.
My number three.
Behind Blue Eyes.
Return of the Night of the Living Dead. That's my number three. The 1985 movie, which was kind of a loose sequel, if you will, to Night of the Living Dead. You know, it kind of played with the idea of the zombie thing that happened in Night of the Living Dead, but kind of expanded upon it, kind of changed some things, but also kind of just made it seem like that Night of the Living Dead movie was more of kind of like a documentary type thing, where it kind of wasn't exactly what really happened, but, you know.
So they're saying like it's a docudrama type thing?
Kind of. Like a
drama about it?
Yeah. Like, well, they're not flat out saying that, but like they kind of hint at that it was a documentary, not just a horror film, that it was documentary. But
interesting cinematography for a documentary.
Right. But they're basically saying it was kind of like portrayed by the military as this is what happened, but this isn't really what happened. Because, you know, in the original Night of the Living Dead, you could kill them by a shot to the head or damaging their head in some way. Mm-hmm. And Return of the Night of the Living Dead, basically, the corpse is reanimated. You could cut off the head. You could shoot them in the head. They still didn't die. Their body. The only way to really destroy them is to basically kind of completely burn the body, incinerate the body. So, yeah. It's a little bit different. They have the movie starts out where the zombies come from. Still kind of comes from the same premise of the original Night of the Living Dead, where it was kind of like a space thing where they're somehow irradiated or whatever. But here what happens is that they found these military canisters that had zombies in them from the actual event that happened. And somebody sees one of the canisters, and there's a phone number to call on or to call the military in case something happens to the canisters or somebody finds them. Of course, somebody opens up one of the canisters, and then
hilarity ensues
because it is actually more of a comedy,
than
a straightforward horror film. I watched this relatively recently again. It holds up. You know, the effects are a little bit dated. You know, as happens with some movies from 1985.
Right.
But for the most part, it's still enjoyable.
Okay.
So I don't want to talk about every little detail about it, but it's pretty. It's a fun movie to watch. So.
All right.
1985's Night of the Living Dead. Not really anybody famous in that movie to speak of. Nobody. Linnea Quigley, I think, is her name. She's one scream queen. She's the
primarily known for Return of the Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, primarily. Yes. That and she's in the movie Night of the Demons, too. That movie, too. I was going to talk about that movie, too, but that's okay. Okay. All right. That's it. Return of the Night of the Living Dead.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. My number two, we're going to have to shift.
Wait, your what?
My deuce.
Yeah. Deuce. There you go. Deuce. Caught us off guard there.
Yeah.
Well, we're used to doing lists of five.
Yeah. That is true. We went straight
to a deuce this time.
The beauty of only having three
is you
deuce that much quicker.
That's right. One and done.
This is the laxative list. Yes.
People will appreciate us doing the deuce.
Yes, they will.
All right. My deuce, my number two, I'm going to focus more on the comic side. It's going to be Marvel's Falcon run of in 2017, issues 6-8, which has Falcon. He's no longer the Captain America with the wings. He has returned to being the Falcon. Now, before I discuss issues 6-8, let's go back through issues 1-5. What ended up happening was the Falcon is trying to stop a gang war from happening in the inner city and comes to find out that the demon Blackheart is behind all the gang violence that is happening in the city and has disguised himself as the mayor of the city, and Falcon
spoils his plans, but in the process, he gets sent to Mephisto's dimension. And so his friends in the living figure out a way to get Falcon out of Mephisto's realm, and he escapes. So Mephisto is pretty mad because not a lot of people escaped from his dimension. And so he sends Deacon Frost to torment Falcon. And that's where issue 6 happens. And Deacon Frost is turning basically all the homeless in the inner city into zombies. Not zombies, but into vampires. So Falcon and his crew has to basically fight a horde of vampires. And Blade comes along. You get a little cameo with Blade and everything, helping to fight the demon, helping to fight the vampires. And I just thought it was just kind of pretty cool having some of the black superheroes just in this fight against Mephisto and Deacon Frost and all the vampires. You get like a little where Blade is trying to ask out Misty Knight, which she's dating Falcon right now. It's kind of funny how they try to interact, and she's basically shooting them down, and Blade's like, yo, you're dating a guy with wings, and why can't you date me? So it's pretty funny. So I enjoyed it, and you know, it's a nice little spin off of, you know, Falcon not just fighting like super villains, but you know, fighting the supernatural. So that is my number two.
I like it.
I've always liked Mephisto.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always liked him as a character too. The Blackheart character I always thought was kind of, they introduced him, I think, I'm pretty sure Ghost Rider.
He's mostly a Ghost Rider villain. Yeah.
I think I had a Ghost Rider Wolverine Blackheart in it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah.
Like it was like it wasn't like a graphic novel. I don't know what you call it. It was just a thick comic book with like a, I don't know what you call it.
Like a,
it was like a deluxe. No, it wasn't even that. It was just a thicker comic book with like more cardboardy cover.
Oh.
Did you ever read Meltdown with Havoc and Wolverine?
Oh yeah.
Like
yeah,
that
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of setup. Okay, I see what you're talking about. I think Ghost Rider and Wolverine. I think it's called Blackheart.
But okay. Except I think there was, I want to say there was a Punisher story, maybe
Punisher was in there too.
Maybe that's
Santa. Maybe it's Ghost Rider. I don't know. Yeah. I haven't read it since the '90s.
Yeah, that's interesting.
When Wolverine and the Punisher were everywhere.
Right. Yeah. They were like, "We need to sell this book quickly." What's Wolverine doing? Okay, we'll throw him in there.
Secret Defenders? Yes, put him in there.
I think there was guest appearances of those for a while there. I was trying to, you know, back in the '90s, I wanted to get every appearance of the Punisher. I figured, oh, this is something, you know, possible maybe. You know, yeah,
there was like this one issue of this.
Yeah. I found it. Ghost Rider, Wolverine, Punisher, Hearts of Darkness.
From that's 1991. It. That's yeah, it. That's man. It.
And Wolverine, let's see. John Romita Jr.
Oh, yeah, I do remember some John Romita Jr. on that, yeah.
It'll take the greatest of evils to stand against the combined power of Ghost Rider, the Punisher, and Wolverine, and that's exactly what they have to face. Blackheart, the demonic son of Mephisto. Written by Howard Mackey, with John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson. And might I add, it was well worth the investment I made in buying that, because it is worth a whole $3.80 right now.
Man, that's got to be, what, a dollar over cover, maybe.
I don't think that much, because it was a thick one.
So, yeah, that's true, yeah, so that deluxe
it's probably a buck probably, less,
yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Not all the appearances of Punisher and Wolverine combined together in one comic are valuable.
No.
There's an Archie comic out there with Punisher in it too somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen about Sabrina?
Oh, about them redoing the
television show?
Yeah, I've heard about it.
Okay.
There's
a trailer for that we'll watch afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
Because Archie did that. They basically made her satanic, Archie Comics.
That's what I heard, yeah.
and when they were like doing all these things, and it is, it looks fantastic.
That's what I've heard. Almost so, like a Buffy-esque type witch type thing. Of
things that I need to show you after.
Yeah,
this.
So
hold on, I will actually start writing these things down. But don't hold fantastic. On. Don't okay. stop talking.
Yeah. Stop. No, I heard about that. Whoa!
I was actually doing a don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Don't stop.
Poor people.
I don't know the rest of the song.
It'll soon be here.
Yesterday's gone.
Yesterday's gone.
All right. Okay. So that's your number two.
What was my number two? Oh, is it my deuce?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we were still on your deuce.
Oh, we're still on my deuce?
Yeah.
Wow.
We just went to black card for a little.
Yeah,
we just went to black card.
I don't know. We segued.
We segued and, you know.
Okay, so my deuce is an Academy Award winning deuce.
Oh!
Multiple Academy Award winning deuce. 1991 movie featuring what's her name? I wanted to call her Jane Foster.
Clarice.
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster.
Not Thor's girlfriend.
Hello, Jane Foster.
Jane Foster.
And Anthony Hopkins and other folks. Ted Levine as James Gumb.
It's been a while since I've... You've said the name of the movie.
Hmm? Or, oh, no. Well, I wasn't okay. like... I figured people probably would know. Directed by Jonathan Demme, it's Silence of the Lambs.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's been a while since you've seen
it? Yes. But I remember really liking it when I saw it.
Yeah, it's a really... I mean, it's a really good movie. Story of an FBI agent, brand new FBI agent, I think actually still cadet, who is brought in to help get information from a... genius serial killer about an ongoing serial killer and the weird relationship that they have of mutual respect, kind of. Had hosts of imitators afterwards. Is really based on the same, is kind of based on the people that the show Mindhunter is about. He based one of the characters on one of the agents that they've fictionalized for that. But it's a great movie beginning to end. It's two different types of killers that you're seeing. You're seeing the really hyper intelligent Anthony Hopkins, who's charming and everything like that. And then you've got the other one, Buffalo Bill. Jamie Gumb, played by Ted Levine in the weirdest voice with the best dance of all time.
Which was also reproduced by
Clerks too. You can't hear "Goodbye Horses" by Q Lazarus and not think of that if you've ever seen it.
That is true.
With such a unique way of talking.
Yeah,
that guy.
Yeah.
It puts lotion on his skin. Puts
the lotion in basket.
It's so weird.
It is weird.
And was the basis for Chris on Family Guy. He is doing that. He's trying to do a weird impression of...
Of Buffalo Bill. I did not know that.
Yeah, I think it's evolved a ton.
I can see that. I can totally see that. Yeah. At the end of that movie with the... night vision goggles.
Yeah.
They had that. That is a pretty tense segment in the film.
Sure.
That's probably, that's the most memorable thing to me in the movie is just like what's going on there where you're like, oh my God.
The most memorable thing in the movie for me is where Hannibal Lecter's been transferred to Tennessee to a less secure prison as part of his deal for the fake information he's giving to other people as opposed to the real information that he's given to. And at when he escapes by a spring from a pen, he's able to get out of his handcuffs. And when they come in to feed him, he kills the two guards in a terrible fashion. And then he turns on classical music, and you can see him like fading into the classical music, goes back to the scene where he bit out a nurse's tongue, where they talk about it, that he bit out a nurse's tongue, tongue while he was in the infirmary, and his heartbeat never went over, you know.
Oh,
80.
Yeah.
And you just see him kind of, and when they walk back in, and he's the other guards walk in, and he's taken one of the guards and hung them and flayed out their back skin so they look angelic hanging up there with this classical music. That's the scene that sticks out.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's cut the face off of one of the guards and put it onto his own. And they take him away in the ambulance thinking he's the guard.
Yeah.
And then when he sits up and takes the guard's face off, that's
that's pretty,
the memorable part for me.
I forgot about that part. Yeah.
And probably the most actual horrifying, because it's more thriller, I think, than horror movie.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of the jump scares. The horror is really just about the fact that there are actual people who do things like this.
Exactly. I meant more along like the edge of your seat type of like,
what's going to
happen, you know, but yeah, what you're talking about though, that is, that's pretty, I forgot about him taking the face off. That's right. That was pretty.
And cameo in that movie. I should have added this to the list of stars. One of the SWAT team that's going up and waiting for him.
Yeah.
Wicked Games, Chris Isaak.
Get out of here. I didn't know that. Really?
80s music.
Man, there you go. What Wicked Games we play.
Yeah. To cut off a face that way.
Oh. Fall in love with you.
There you go. Yeah. All right. So what we are on Deuce. My Deuce is based off of a Stephen King short story, I believe.
It is.
And that movie is 1408.
Okay.
So it stars John Cusack and Samuel Jackson.
Yeah.
Is in. John Cusack plays a writer who likes to write about paranormal phenomena. Okay. So he
get that out of your head.
Get that. I know. Now I'm like, what was I talking about? So the hotel, he finds out about this hotel that is supposed to be haunted. He doesn't believe in ghosts or the supernatural or anything, because he has, you know, he's been trying to investigate this stuff and write about it, and he's never actually seen any legit proof that this type of thing exists. So he finds out about this hotel called the Dolphin Hotel. And Samuel Jackson is, I believe, the manager of the hotel owner or something like that. Something like that. He warns him not to stay in, because it's not really the whole hotel that has a problem. It's one particular room.
Yeah.
That room being 1408.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, the title. Oh, yeah, I get it.
Isn't that weird how they did that? They tied that together with the name of the movie. Yeah. So he's warning him not to stay in 1408, and of course he does anyways, and all kinds of mayhem and madness ensues as he stays there.
I've watched this movie.
Yeah.
But it's been a long time. How is it that he convinced them to stay in 1408?
I can't remember either. I think he...
Because we watched the trailer.
Yes, yeah.
And he's like, I beg you not to stay in 1408, or whatever it was he said. So he's the manager. Why doesn't he just not stay?
You know what I think it is? I think there was some sort of legal thing where they had that room and he had... I want to say that. I could be making this all up because it's been a little while since I've seen the movie. But, yeah, I think there was something like that.
Partial facts are the best type of
partial. Partially true facts. Anyways, though,
good guesses.
Good guesses.
Fake spoilers.
Meanwhile,
this may or may not have happened in the movie. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. I thought it was a very good. I like the story behind it. A lot of the effects and stuff.
What's
like
the
it.
Unluckiest number?
The unluckiest number.
Yeah. Traditionally.
Oh, 13, right.
1 plus 4 plus 8. Oh,
get out of here. Oh, see, I didn't even know that. I didn't even make that connection.
Stephen King, I only know that because Stephen King said that.
Oh, man. And the one thing that I will say about this, because I was reading some of the trivia about it, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Sure.
Most of the footage in this movie was not shot on location. oddly enough. It was stock footage purchased from the website GettyImages.com.
What?
That's what it says. The room 1408 was created as a set and was not a real hotel room. But a lot of the footage, I guess, was actually taken from GettyImages.com.
Really?
That's what IMDb says.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fake news.
Fake news.
Partially.
Partially fake news.
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought that was kind of crazy. I guess I could kind of see where some of the stuff might be, you know, where, like the weird things that he sees and stuff like that. Maybe that's somehow tied into that. I could see that. I mean, John Cusack wasn't probably purchased from Getty Images. I don't know.
It is a very little known fact, but John Cusack is actually a Getty Image.
That is completely crazy.
It's true. Also originally from a Pennsylvania town. Do you know which one?
No.
Gettysburg.
There it is. It's all coming together now.
There is no truth to the statement I'm making.
No truth.
Except that John Cusack is a Getty Image.
Yeah. And Gettysburg is an actual city.
In Pennsylvania.
But we cannot verify whether or not Pennsylvania actually exists. So.
No.
So we don't, you know.
I kind of been there.
You've been there?
Yeah. Have you ever been to Finland?
I have not been to Finland.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've met someone from Finland.
A likely story.
Yeah. At least they said they were Finnish.
Yeah. You're sure they weren't saying they were finished?
They may have been finished.
And that your money was on the table.
You might be right. You might be right. They may have said that.
Yeah.
So this whole Swedish day, it's not really Swedish day, right? Okay.
No.
I thought it was Swedish day. But
now we're letting people know where we live because they don't celebrate Swedish day in most of the country.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was invented in Cleveland.
Was it really?
By the confectioners.
Man.
It was originally the sweetest day of the year. The idea was to sell more candy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with the Swedes.
No.
Wait a minute, you thought Swedish day had something to do with the Swedes?
Not really.
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Also, Swedish fish?
Yes.
I don't believe they're really from Sweden.
You can get them at IKEA, though.
Yeah.
So, you know, you take that with a grain of salt. Yeah.
I can get a lamp from IKEA, too. It doesn't mean that they invented light.
That's true. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, can we really verify that one way or the other?
It doesn't mean they did. Didn't mean they didn't.
That's true. Yeah. This is true. These are just things that we can and cannot prove.
Right.
Yeah. So yes. So the things we cannot prove.
You know what Sweden did produce though?
What's that?
The band Ghost.
The band Guess, yes.
And they're one of my current favorite obsessions.
Yeah, they're pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And fit right in with the theme. Yes. Yeah. They have some.
I've been enjoying their music to a ridiculous degree. And this is a digression, so we'll probably get back to the list now.
Yeah, we probably should. Yeah. We have only three selections in this one, but it's already gone on for 42 minutes. So, yes, 1408.
1408.
Yes. Yeah. An enjoyable little jaunt down.
Yes.
Whatever.
Swedish lane.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. That was a really deep rabbit hole.
It was.
All right. Now.
we're riding the red wave.
Riding the red wave. Yeah.
Right down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Right down the rabbit hole to our R. Kelly Memorial.
Thank you.
Number one.
and
number one choice. All right. This isn't my number one pick is not per se a horror in the horror genre or anything, but it brings a very interesting question and maybe even like something kind of even more scary. My number one is the current DC event called Hero in Crisis. Now, the
premise of this series is that the DC's big three, and that is Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman.
Whoa! What about Plastic Man?
You know what? He's not in this. He is the big three. So who would he have taken place? Huh? Wouldn't that be make that four, or is Plastic Man like being like someone's like Wonder Woman's?
Look, if you're asking me.
Okay.
The big three in DC.
Who's the big three in DC?
Plastic Man.
Okay.
Dr. Light.
Okay.
And Booster Gold.
So which Dr. Light are we talking about? Villain Dr. Light, yes. or Villain Dr. Light? Okay, those are the big three for you. Rick, do you have a big three of DCs?
I can't believe you said Plastic Man without saying Elastic Man. Is there an Elastic Man?
They're both.
You know what? Actually, okay. I take it all back.
Elastic Man.
If you're going to talk the true DC big three.
Okay.
It's Zan.
Oh,
Jaina.
And
Gleep.
Yeah.
That is the holy trinity of DC.
That's right, yeah.
So if you're going to talk the other big three, I guess go on.
The other. We're talking about the not so well known big three of Batman, Superman, like
Hawk and Dove.
The lesser.
Oh, wait. Who's this Batman?
Superman, you're speaking of?
Yeah, I was just reading about Hawk and Dove yesterday, too.
It's getting weird in here.
So. The other big three, Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, created this center called the Sanctuary Rehabilitation Center, which is kind of like a small little town, which was supposed to be built to help heroes deal with their PTSD, post-traumatics.
Stress disorder.
You know, when fighting villains and things happening, because as we know, being a hero has consequences and price, and sometimes we don't know how to deal with that. So, you know, a few of the heroes are there, like Booster Gold, and some anti-heroes like Harley Quinn. Are there to deal with?
Booster Gold was there.
Yeah, Booster Gold is there. Oh. He is one of the main characters.
So
they're trying to deal with their PTSD, but ends up finding out that somebody is killing people in the sanctuary.
Mm.
And this just came out. So issue one is out, and I think issue two will be coming out sometime in the upcoming weeks. So if you have not started reading it yet or are very interested, pick it up now. And this brings up a question for me, because in the history of DC, since I've been reading like DC comics, the heroes in DC don't really know how to deal with, you know, PTSD or just trauma in their lives. I mean, maybe it's due to the fact that they're basically always restarting the universe over and over and over again.
Yeah, maybe.
Like an instance was, we all remember the 2004 identity crisis, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right. Now, one of the big problems was the fact that the heroes were erasing, you know, villains' memories.
Which villain?
One of the big three. Dr. Light. There you go. See?
Look at this.
It's all part of the plan.
It's all coming true.
And not only that, but they also did that to Batman also, and some other heroes. So it's kind of keeps backfiring on them. It's kind of scary to the fact that these heroes just like to mind wipe everybody. I mean, I can count on one hand when Professor Xavier has done it. But other than that, I like, in the DC universe, it's kind of constant. Either the universe, it does it itself, or the heroes do it. It's like, are the villains even the really bad guys? It's kind of scary.
That's the question that you have to ask. The villain is the hero of their own story, right?
Could be.
That's
there you go. Yeah.
But it's all from a certain point of view.
And it's even scarier that
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Like if you think about it, like Superman is supposed to be what all the heroes look up to. But Superman's not really a Boy Scout. Superman kind of is like one event away from being like
a Boy Scout pack leader.
Yeah. like super evil. And I think that they really do that in, what's the story? That they have out.
Injustice.
Yeah.
Gods Among Us.
Yeah. Injustice, yeah. Gods Among Us. I mean, that basically, you know, shows like Superman just turning bad because Lois is dead. And it's like, it takes only that to get Superman to turn bad. And then Wonder Woman just falls basically anything that Superman does.
Well, you know, and here's the thing. You know, if you look at it, say, from Lex Luthor's perspective, Superman is the bad guy, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Lex Luthor's doing morally bad things. Later Lex Luthor, not early mad scientist Lex Luthor. But because Superman's kind of stepped in and made himself the world's police.
Yeah.
He's taken things that he has no right to do. So I get if he's protecting the Earth from, you know, cosmic invasion, but for the most part, if you really think about it, Superman is placing his values out there as what is always right. He is deciding who needs arrested. He doesn't play executioner usually, right. But he's judging people.
Right. And you would think if you're going to use some sort of wisdom, why wouldn't you use, you know, Shazam's?
Right.
I mean,
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we all know
Shazam.
How?
Oh, not that Shazam. Sorry.
We all know that nothing could go wrong if you put someone who has the brain of a 12-year-old in high office.
Yes, yes, yes.
Of course.
Nothing but good things can happen. Nothing but good things can go on.
To get things the way they used to be.
They could make the Justice League great again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could make Shazam Captain Marvel again.
Right. But yeah, but that's my number. That's always kind of been more scary than most horror movies for me. Is the DC Universe's moral code at times more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that is my number one. Deal with it.
Deal with it. Oh.
My number one is a Korean movie from director, and I can't say his name, so I'm going to murder this. I apologize. The scariest thing about this podcast will be my attempt to pronounce this name. Yang Sang-ho. And it's Train to Busan. The story of a father who's taking his, we'll call it an emotionally detached father who works all the time, is taking his daughter on a train to see their mother, well, not their mother, see her mother, who he is separated / divorced from. And as they get on the train, an infected person is another part of the train is becoming a zombie, and so it becomes a zombies on a train movie, and it is so awesome. It is fast zombies, not the slow zombies. They turn fast and they come at you fast. But when they stop at the second stop, when they stop at the in-between stop and they discover that the train station is completely overrun after they're getting out and whatever, and they get chased back, and some of the core groups of survivors get separated. And so one group has to try to make it to the ones who are trapped in a car full of zombies in the restroom as they work their way through, and it becomes people versus people. And it kind of brings up not so much class, but just the distrust of the others, where they don't want to let them in because one of them might be bit. You know, and it's just really good. It's really good.
Yeah, that is a great movie. I thought the setting of it too, just all taking place on a train.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really kind of cool.
I read somewhere that a critic complained that it was just Snowpiercer with zombies. And I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like, what is not cool about that? Seriously.
And the problem with that was.
Yeah, that's like saying, well, it's just dinosaurs with pirates on them. Well, yeah. That's awesome too.
Exactly. All these things you're saying are awesome.
Yeah.
I remember there was a different movie. I think it was called Quarantine 2, and it took place on an airplane in mid-flight.
No.
And I think the train to this was done way better.
Yeah, I didn't see Quarantine 2. Were they not allowed to land?
I think they had to keep going or something like that, but people were infected, and at one point it was like a big jumbo jet. So at one point they had to crawl in the ceiling of the plane, and while zombies are trying to grab them and stuff. And I think there was this one part where the guy, one of the heroes gets bit by an old lady, but she doesn't have her teeth in.
Oh,
so
yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of funny. He's like, oh, and then she's like, oh, she don't have her teeth in. Oh, okay. It's kind of like, well, if she would have had her teeth in, those aren't real teeth. So
you're right.
But
but
then it had a stupid ending. So like the zombies could literally get sucked out of the plane, but then land perfectly safe onto the ground and start walking. So yeah.
Train of Busan ending, I gotta say, was a little bit emotionally heart-wrenching.
Oh, it was. Yeah. It was, actually. That was, yeah.
It's not often that you can watch a zombie movie and go like, oh, my feels.
Right, yeah. That, and it was sort of just all, even the effects in the movie were way better than I expected when the trains were like kind of crashing.
Yeah, I don't normally like to read movies.
Yeah.
Just in general. Yeah. But that's one of my favorite horror movies.
Oh, yeah.
And Pan's Labyrinth is one of my favorite movies. So
speaking of Pan's Labyrinth, that one in the beginning of the, pretty early on in the movie, with the wine bottle.
With the rabbit.
Or what, wine bottle?
Bachelor. No, the rabbit hunter.
Yeah.
They said they were out hunting rabbits. And
yes, yeah. That is
bashes
like,
his face in.
That, wow.
In front of his father, right?
Yeah. That was.
That's a brutal thing.
That was, yeah. When I saw the movie, I didn't know what to expect from that movie. When I saw that, I was like a little bit, whoa, okay. And then that's a kind of a dark movie, yeah.
Oh, it's a good movie, though.
It is a good movie.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
That might be one of my top five. Maybe not. I don't know. It's hard for me to pick a top five of my favorite movies, but top five favorite foreign films.
Oh, yeah.
It's in my top two. Yeah, I see that. Actually, it's my favorite foreign film.
All right. Well, speaking about dark movies.
Yeah.
My number one, I didn't really pick this movie because I guess I like it or enjoy it. I guess it's just a movie that's really kind of, it's like one of those movies you see one time and then it's, okay. I don't need to go back and revisit that. The movie I'm talking about is 2007's Funny Games. The movie starts out, premise is basically two brothers that are kind of serial killers, like stalking his family. But the intro to the movie, I think, kind of sets this whole stage for the whole film, where you see the family riding in, they're laughing and stuff, and driving, and then all of a sudden, as they're laughing and driving, it just cuts in to this heavy metal song, like death metal, just blah, blah, like screaming and stuff as they're driving and laughing, and you just kind of like, oh, well, that's a little unsettling to see that, and that whole feeling continues on through the rest of the film, and the movie definitely plays with your emotions because it plays with the viewer more so, I guess, than the movie itself, because I don't think the plot is anything that's like amazing or anything like that. it's a pretty simple story. Just two serial killers kind of torturing a family. You know, they pick a family. And
sounds like the feel-good movie of the year.
Right, right. And, yeah, the movie was recommended to me by somebody who I know that enjoys horror films. And
enjoys serial killing?
Maybe.
Families.
I can't, you know, confirm that or not.
So you're not the other one then?
Yes.
So we have that.
Okay, we're good. We're safe. All right.
So there, well, I would say that. Right, you're no loner.
Right.
But I always seem like such a nice guy.
I don't understand it. But no, I mean, if it's a movie that you want to see that really gets to you after you watch it, yeah, this movie does do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a movie that I would like, hey, you know, I want to go see that. Like, it's not a fun horror movie.
No.
You know, like Return of the Night of the Living Dead, that's a fun horror movie, you know.
Yeah.
And 1408, it's a horror movie that has a pretty good plot to it and everything, and it's, you know, there's a story behind it.
So it's like the Requiem of a Dream of the horror movie.
It is. That's a good way of thinking of it. Yeah. So, but it's also a remake. I believe the original one was a German film, but from what I understand, it's almost identical.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. In fact, I think the same director did it, but he just kind of Americanized it.
Got it.
So. I mean, it does have some big name actors in it. Tim Roth is in it. He plays the male lead, and Naomi Watts is the female lead. Mm. I was kind of surprised to see that they were in the movie, to be perfectly honest with you, because it's such a, you know, a different movie, I think, for both of them. But yeah.
Interesting.
All right. So that's my number one.
All right. I have not seen it.
Never seen it?
I haven't seen it.
No. So you may or may not want to see it based off of the comments I've just made, but you know.
So you're saying it could be like a blue waffle where I don't want to look it up?
It could be, yeah. But you may want to see it just to know what I'm talking about.
So curiosity might get the better of me?
It may. That is a possibility.
So, okay.
All right. So anything else we want to wrap up with or anything?
I think
that's it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Check us out on our social media, on our Facebook page, our website, allmanissues.com, on our Twitter, and other social media and podcasting events. We have our podcasts on iTunes and Google Play.
CastBox.
Yeah.
And CastBox.
All like, man, the typical places you go and find podcasts.
Boom.
You can find us. So, yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Happy Halloween.
Woo!
Bye.
Bye.